All right. It seems like we're a little bit low energy. We got to bring up the energy. I know this room's dark. This room's sad. This is a really massive room for us to be just on this tiny little corner. And so as we try to get a little bit more energy, we're trying to get in the game. We're trying to get in the game of discipleship. Are you ready to get in the game with me this morning? I feel like I still need a little bit more convincing that you actually want to get in the game. Can I just? Yes, there we go. Hey, you're here. You're here this morning. Welcome. Thanks for showing up. All right, so we're going to get into the game of discipleship. And so a huge part of this particular talk is that it's very interactive, and so I'm going to need you to give me something. We're going to have two mic runners in a little bit. But I want you, can someone with a loud, boisterous voice, please stand up and read this definition at the top of your packet. This is our Disciple Makers definition on discipleship. So could someone volunteer and stand up and read it nice and loud, please? Yeah. Oh, I didn't tell you the page. It's just the next page over from Lincoln's. Yeah.
A relationship centered on helping someone know, love, and obey Jesus by means of the gospel according to Jesus.
Thank you. What's your name?
Abby.
Abby. Great. All right. I want you guys to interact with that. What do you hear? What do you see in this discipleship definition? What is it? What stands out? And then grab a mic. Raise your hand so you can get a mic. It's for the purpose of the recording. Maggie, right up here. No, you're okay.
I notice the focus on helping someone, so putting someone above ourselves.
Yes, there's like this partnership with there. Yeah, that's great. What else do you guys see?
We have according to his word, so there's a foundation of the scriptures.
Yes, it's not according to who you are. It's not according to who they are. It's not according to if it's on Tuesday. That's helpful.
There's like the whole head, heart, hands dynamic in the third line, no love and obey Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, this actually gives you some helpful applications in how you spend your time and what that looks like. Keep going. What else do you guys see? You got someone up front.
It's fully centered on. There's nothing else that like could drive it away. It's centered on Jesus.
Yes, there's a particular driving, narrow focus. Absolutely. That's great. We've got someone in the back.
It's relational, meaning yes. Like it's through love that you have with one another to get through the word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. It's very relational. It's not like the stagnant thing that's kind of has you step back. No, it actually draws near to another person. That's great. Oh, okay. Well done.
It's centered on the gospel. It's not white-knuckling better behavior. It's the gospel of grace that forgives us and empowers us.
Yes, that's so good. It's centered on the gospel. Yeah, I think you just brought out something really helpful because it doesn't really talk about exactly what, like that everything is centered on us and what we do and how we communicate it. It's very much purposefully centered on the gospel. That's great. Any other last little tidbits that you guys saw? Great. Thanks for your participation. As we continue on with this discipleship definition, I'm going to focus on that first line, a relationship centered on. We're specifically going to be looking at what does this relationship look like? What is our heart posture? What should our philosophy of ministry look like in terms of discipleship? And so we're going to ponder on two specific passages, and I'm going to break us up into little groups here. These first two rows, you guys are going to read Colossians 1, verses 3 through 29 together. You can have little pockets of how you guys decide to read it. And you guys, and follow this application for everybody else, you guys are going to specifically focus on what was Paul's philosophy for ministry? What did he think about people? How did he talk about people? And how did he communicate with people? That's what you're going to focus on. This next two rows, you guys are specifically going to focus on 1 Thessalonians chapter 1. You're going to answer the same question. What is Paul's philosophy of ministry? How did he treat people? What did he think about people? What did he believe about people? And that next like two rows/three rows, you guys are going to focus on 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. I'm going to give you guys 10 minutes. 10 minutes, read it, talk about it together, and you guys can have multiple representatives report on it in a little bit. Because the other rows haven't read it, you're going to explain it well. So take 10 minutes. Talk about it. Come on back. As you guys come back to your groups, I'm going to have you guys report on Paul's philosophy of ministry. What did he think about people? How did he move towards people? The other groups have not read your passage, so maybe call out the verse numbers that you found, some of your observations, and just like expound upon what you found. It doesn't have to be like this big theological perfect sentence. It's just what are your clear observations from the text. There are still mic runners, and so if you could preferably use a mic, that'd be great. We're going to start off in these first two rows with Colossians chapter 1. So you can use one representative or multiple of you guys can speak. It's up to you. But I'm going to need somebody.
Okay, so in Colossians 1 we read, he talks a little bit about how it's not just his responsibility to like do the commands of Christ, that it's also ours that he's like passing down onto us. It's how like it goes from Jesus to the apostles to us.
Yes, that's beautiful. Yeah, there's this trickle-down effect. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What else did you guys hear? Thank you.
Yeah, I know. Something that was noticed is in verse 13, it says, he has delivered us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved son. So like part of the priority was that he's not only showing the good that comes of spreading the gospel, but what we would be avoiding.
Yes, that's great. Oh, that's so great. That's helpful. Yeah. In that first little section, we'll say verses like 3 through 8, where is Paul's heart posture towards the people? I'm going to help us out here.
He's very, like, grateful and thanking, and he's, like, of all of their faith and their love for each other and, like, how far they've already come. He's praying and thanking God for them.
Yes, there's this intimate relationship that he knows them, and he is thankful for them, and he's displaying that thanks. That's great. Wonderful. What else did you guys hear? Or how did that relationship continue after verse 9? Go ahead.
Towards the end of chapter 1, he talks about how, in verse 29, for this I toil, struggling with all his energy, that he powerfully works through me, showing that it's not necessarily an easy thing to continue to do, but that's the truth of the gospel, and he's not going to shy away from that when making disciples, and he's going to show them the truth of that.
Yes, building the relationships, pursuing people in discipleship, spreading the good news, it is hard, but it is worth the cost. That's great. Any other things that you guys see? Did you see any other relationships that were built here even? Or how did the people receive the gospel? Maybe from Colossians 1. It's just the word. Right? So there's people going and preaching to the church. That's how they receive the word. And so this relationship has to be centered on the word and the scriptures and telling them the word and the scriptures. Yeah, that's great. We'll move on to the next group, First Thessalonians chapter 1. What did you guys see and hear about Paul's philosophy for ministry?
We noticed a lot of encouragement centered around their obedience to Jesus. And even in verse 6, and you became imitators of us and of the Lord. So kind of like that double-ended commandment we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah, and who is the us that is being referred to in this passage? Like, we know Paul is writing the book, but there are a couple other characters that are mentioned at least.
There's Paul, there's Timothy, and then there's Syphilus.
Yeah. I think later, at least, this might be a chapter 2 reference here, too, but Epaphras is also mentioned here. And so this, we have, you know, Paul as a disciple who is making disciples, and those disciples are going out and doing the same good work. Yeah. What else do you guys hear from chapter 1?
We saw there was a lot of gospel-centered, so you have a lot of the Jesus, Lord, God, Father. And then also that multiplication.
Yes. Gospel-centered multiplication. That's great. Anything else that you guys saw in that chapter?
Uh,
It was very focused on, like, the hands of, like, obeying Jesus, where it was very, like application-centered, of, like, how, like, we're supposed to, like act out as Christians.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very applicational. That's great. Yeah. All right, let's move on to chapter 2. What did you guys hear there?
One thing I noticed was... his, like, I guess, like, Paul's focus is just in pleasing God primarily. Mm-hmm. That's in verse 4, mm-hmm. instead of pleasing man. So that, like, even though the people in Thessalonica were responding well, even if they weren't, like, Paul's goal is to just, like, preach the truth and have that come across. That seems, like, pretty foundational to his ministry mindset.
Yeah, that's so helpful and so freeing. Like, as you're moving in towards relationship with people, your goal is not to please them. Not to necessarily make them angry, hopefully, but your goal is to be faithful to the Lord and what he has called you to do. Yeah.
They said that they worked night and day to not be a burden on the people that they were teaching, they were discipling. They wanted to teach them the gospel without being like a burden on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're really taking the ownership over their own work and specifically their clothing and their food and their labor. Yes. Mm-hmm.
He makes a very profound point of being genuine with them. It's something he stresses a lot in the chapter where he basically is repeating, we did not come with, like, cloak and dagger. We did not come with deceit or lies. Like, he's just constantly talking about how, like, he's not trying to trick them or lie to them. He's just being, like, blunt and upfront about everything with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's this genuine relationship. And even we kind of saw a glimmer of that in chapter 1, too, and chapter 1 of 1 Thessalonians and Colossians chapter 1, where the churches that he is investing in, they know him. They know his sufferings, and he knows their suffering. And so he is genuine and authentic in his relationship, and he is well known amongst the church, and they know him. That's great. What else do you guys see? Or any other? Yep.
Paul also, in verse 8, says he's not just, like, sharing the gospel and these truths and giving that, but he's also giving, he says that, well, it's, like, multiple, but giving of our own selves. So it's, like, a sacrificial ministry. He doesn't just, like, you know, these are people he personally knows, and there's, like, a personal connection. So he's not just, like, giving truths and he feels unattached. Like, he feels so deeply involved in his giving of himself.
Yeah, that's so helpful. And it's either in chapter 2 or chapter 1, one of these passages particularly, it speaks a little bit deeper about this intimate relationship that he has. How does Paul compare his relationship with the church? Did you guys catch it? He described his relationship as like a nursing mother. Isn't that very interesting? Does Paul know anything about nursing any babies? No, but this is a great example of how intimate and close their relationship was, that he loved them dearly as a mother would love her nursing infant. And as someone who has 4 kids, man, that love is strong. It is strong and it is deep. And so this is the relationship that Paul had with the church. And so that sets us up for a helpful, thank you, Mike Renners, a helpful mindset. Actually, I just released you, but I do still need you because we're going to keep going. I'm sorry. Since we know Paul's philosophy about ministry, ministry can feel hard when it comes to discipleship. And so I have some objections that are pretty common on our next point here. And so think about what Paul has already said in these first 3 chapters, and we're going to apply it to some of these typical objections when it comes to pursuing discipleship. So the first one here is, yeah, I don't really want to do discipleship. I don't really need any more friends. I think my cup is full. What would you say to that? Or what did we learn about Paul, and how would he respond?
Like, the goal of discipleship shouldn't be, like, to help yourself to make more friends. It should be to help others get to know Christ.
Yes, that's so true. I feel like what you're kind of hitting on a little bit is that discipleship is not primarily about you.
I think another
thing is... It will... You keep talking. Dan will get
I think another thing is that recognizing that Jesus didn't need us. So it's easy to say, like, oh, we don't need any more friends, but Jesus took initiative with us. And in verse 21 of Colossians 1, it says, and you were once alienated and hostile in mind, and Jesus did not need to pursue us at all. And that should motivate us to take the initiative and pursue others.
Yeah, we can take the initiative because we know, how, like, Jesus is a friend of sinners. He pursued us and took initiative with us. He has every right not to be friends with us because we're kind of ugly in comparison, but no, he pursued a relationship with us, and so you also can pursue a relationship with others. That's so helpful. Yeah, so discipleship is not just about collecting friendships like social accessories. That's not what discipleship is. It's not collecting friendships like social accessories. The goal is not a bigger social circle. The goal is helping people move towards Jesus. That is what the goal of discipleship is. All right, so another objection is relationships, they just shouldn't feel forced. So I don't really want to pursue discipleship. Relationships, even though they might not feel like that, you don't want to make them feel forced, intentional doesn't mean artificial. Intentional doesn't mean artificial. For example, when it comes to marriage and the spouses are dating each other and continuing to get to know each other, no one says in a marriage, well, you're spending, it's too intentional. Like, why would you desire to get to know each other more? That just feels really artificial and forced. No, that's a healthy marriage. That you're getting to know each other and that you're pursuing each other and getting to the heart with each other. That is intentional and that is good. And the same thing goes for discipleship. All right. One is, I just don't vibe with other people. I just don't vibe with them. I don't think I can pursue discipleship with them. What would you say?
I mean, Christ came down to come for the sinners, not the saints.
I'm sorry. Say that again. I couldn't actually hear.
Christ came down for the sinners, not the saints. So mm-hmm. We have to do the same.
Yes. Yeah. Christ came down for the sinners, not the saints. Yeah. So you can move towards people regardless. Yeah. Any other thoughts? Or even just like what the feeling is behind a phrase or an objection like that?
Yeah, I think behind this objection is the idea that I can only have an impact on people I connect with, which is actually, if you think about it, that's undermining the power of God to work through people cross-culturally and with differences. Like, is God so weak that he can only work with people that are like us?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think so.
No, yeah. If at the end of the age, all of the nations and all of the tribe are going to be worshiping the Lamb at the end of the age, I mean, they're going to look different than us. Those are going to be people that we might not originally vibe with, but we can still move towards them with love and compassion. Because often with a phrase like this, it makes it feel like feelings are paramount in terms of pursuing like discipleship. That what I feel and what I think about that person or how they come across, that's the thing that's paramount. But Paul and his philosophy for ministry says people, like in Christ, people are paramount. And so you move towards people because Christ, he came for people, not just what your feelings are in that moment. Yeah, the gospel creates a family that human preferences could never create. Our families would look completely different if it was all based on preferences here. All right, another objection. Discipleship makes people into projects. What would you say?
I would say that's cap because a project is like something you have to fix, and that's the connotation I get from it.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, obviously, like you're not fixing people, and you're not just like purely instruction. You're helping them. You're like, listen, I don't have all the answers, but you're pointing them to the gospel. And obviously, they are broken people, but you don't have the tools to fix them yourself. So you are pointing them to the gospel and helping them grow. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you are also realizing things about yourself and growing yourself. So,
mm-hmm. That's so helpful. I feel like you just hit two things there, is that the purpose, good job. The purpose is not, yeah, it's not about fixing people. It's about walking with people as they are grown by the Spirit and looking more like Jesus every single day. Absolutely. And it also talks about what you receive on this relationship with discipleship. Yes, you get to pour out and helping people to love, know, and obey Jesus, but also you can be a student of them and learn from them and how the gospel is applying to them. And so you get to receive as you give in the midst of this. That's great. Yeah, people... when you view discipleship as projects, you can tend to think about them as interruptions to your ministry. But Jesus knew about these interruptions. If you look in the Gospels, he's always headed somewhere and someone stops him. And so he is okay with that stopping. He moves towards people because people are and were his ministry. And that's how he moves towards people. It's not about controlling people into spiritual growth, but actually coming alongside of people while the Spirit is already working in them. All right, so another objection. I am too introverted. I'm just too awkward. I can't pursue discipleship with someone.
I mean, I feel like I can speak to this because I identify with both of those. I am pretty introverted. I think I'm also kind of awkward. But having this mindset, like, it's kind of like what Lincoln said. Like, it's just putting all the weight of it on you and, like, not recognizing that it's actually, like, God working through you. So when you say, like, yeah, you're too introverted or awkward, it's like really putting a limit on God. Like, he can still use you in those relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. It's so helpful. That's great. Other thoughts about this one? Go ahead, Ron. Oh, no, Maggie first.
I think we can assume that introversion or something, which is part of your personality, makes you unusable by God in some, like, the Lord knows you're an introvert. He made you that way. Like, it just means you need some rest at the end of the day by yourself. Like, that doesn't mean you don't love people or you can't, it's not like you can't love people. Mm-hmm. So I think recognizing your personality differences don't make you more or less valuable to God or able to be on mission.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so good. That's so helpful. I would say that I'm more of an outgoing introvert, and so I'm tempted to just sit on the sidelines, and the Lord can use giftings of introversion for his glory, and that I can, since I'm not usually filling the room with my voice, except for right now, obviously, that's a little bit awkward, but I can actually sit and listen and pay attention to what someone says and draw near to them because I'm not often right in the middle, if that makes sense. Go ahead, Ron.
Reminds me of what Moses said to God whenever God called Moses. Moses was like, but I don't talk very well. Mm-hmm. And God was like, who created your mouth? Mm. Mm-hmm. Like God, is, like what Maggie was saying, like God created you how you are and can use you how you are, like right now, and will continue to grow you in discipleship.
Yeah, that's so helpful. I'm so glad you brought that up because personality might shape how you communicate. It might shape how you disciple and what that looks like, but it does not remove your call to discipleship. And it does not remove your call towards people and to love people, even in the midst of it. And so the qualification for discipleship, it's not riz, it's love. Our last one here, pursuing people is scary. Pursuing people is scary. You're quick. You're right on it.
It's to me, like, in this life that we live in, like, the plane that we exist in, like, just guiding people to God is probably the most important thing you can do, because in our sins, we are dead, but through Christ, we are alive. And then, like, if you look at it like that, if you look at pursuing people being scary, mm-hmm. you're scared of, like, a fleeting earthly judgment. Mm. But then if you're taking that vulnerability and that step to guide someone to God, you're guiding them to something more eternal.
Mm-hmm. That's so helpful. Yes, changing your perspective that what's more scary? People internally not knowing who the Lord is and spending eternity not knowing who he is. Or what's better, them actually getting to go to glory with you and rejoicing in the Lamb forever. Yeah, that's so helpful. Go ahead.
I gotta say, yeah, sometimes pursuing people is pretty scary, but it's kind of something you gotta get over a little bit. And a great thing to remind yourself is that, like, it's not you going into this alone, being, like, dropped in the middle of a group of people, and you're like, I have to find someone to pursue, and I'm all by myself in this. Deuteronomy 31:8 says, it is the Lord who goes before you. Mm. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. And then Joshua 1:9 says, have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened, and do not be dismayed. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. So it's like, even in this, the Lord is guiding you as you attempt to pursue these people and guide them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so helpful. Thank you for bringing out those scriptures, because you are not alone. While people might feel scary, the judge is with you. You are not on trial with people, just like Paul. He is committed not to be a people pleaser, and in the same way, we can be committed to please the Lord and know that the Lord is walking through it with us. And even as Lincoln mentioned, the gospel, it's the family business. And so not only do we have our king on the throne who is with us, We also have each other because this is a family business. You're not alone. This is not a one, just a silo, a one-person operation. No, it's a family business that we can actually pursue relationships with people. Okay, we're going to move on to point two, some cultural errors here. Our culture has discipled us into some maybe broken ways about thinking about relationships here. And most people swing between like these three bad views of relationships. I even resonate with one of them. But relationships, the first fill in here is relationships is chemistry. What do you think about relationships as chemistry? What would you say? Sorry, mic runners, I'm just putting you in the whole time. What would a relationship based on chemistry mostly look like?
I mean, to me, the way I kind of like think of chemistry is that it's kind of focused on like vibes. Like, do you guys like get along? Do you like similar things? Like, just like, do you guys have that good like connection with each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
That's pretty much what I was gonna say. Yeah, I think if you go back to the, like what we were talking about earlier, of like, I just don't vibe with some people. I kind of think of a relationship, seeing relationships of as chemistry kind of is like a relationship, looking at a relationship with the mindset of you do vibe with that person, of like having that, like the people that like just kind of click together and like going in with that mindset of like, well, I click with these people and I don't click with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very helpful. Yeah. Relationships as chemistry really focuses in like, I value you. I value you in our relationship because we naturally click. But the danger about this specific one is that the comfort becomes your compass. Like how you feel and what you're thinking and how you process, that it becomes your compass and actually directs you on where you go. But biblical love is deeper than shared hobbies or personal interests. And this is what we're talking about with discipleship. It's not about that at all. And so some of the most meaningful people in your life may be people that you wouldn't have naturally chosen, but the Lord has still brought you towards to love with compassion and grace. And to be clear, I'm not against you enjoying your relationships or having shared hobbies and things like that. Like, that is totally fine and good, but that should not be the driving force as to why you pursue relationships with people. All right, the next fill-in here is relationships as commodity. Relationships ask, what do I get from this? Is it affirmation? Is it entertainment, emotional support, status, usefulness? Consumer Christianity creates consumer relationships here. When we view relationships like this, we start to move towards people just benefiting us, and we slowly stop pursuing them. And so here, we just want to raise our gaze off of ourselves and that it's just not about us. It's about Jesus as we pursue relationships. Like, we can be affectionately desirous of people just like Paul was here and seek to know that our hope has been found in Christ. And so we're not finding our hope in people and what we can get from people. All right, this next one is relationship as convenience. Relationships as convenience. Convenience says, I love you as long as it costs me very little. Convenience says, I love you if it fits in my schedule. That's when I'll meet with you and talk to you. It doesn't drain me. It happens naturally. It's nearby. It's easy. And it doesn't interrupt with any of my plans. I'm going to be honest. This is probably the one that actually I resonate with the most is convenience. Because I'm mostly at home with my kids. I'm a stay-at-home mom of four kids. I also do teaching like this at conferences as well. But I'm mostly at home educating my kids. And I'm like, well, okay, well, I can meet with you if you can come to my house at this particular time of the day, specifically during my kids' nap time. So here's a two-hour window that you can only come over. Oh, well, I can't really go to campus with you. How about we meet over here instead? And then, like, it just continues to snowball into different preferences. Don't get me wrong. There are times in our schedules that we do need to actually fit discipleship in. But I often just talk about it as convenience. It's like, well, I only want to do it if it feels convenient, and it's not costly to me. It costs me very little. And that is not what the main pursuit of discipleship should be. Because anything in this life, specifically when it comes to preaching the gospel, it's going to be inconvenient. It's not going to fit into our schedule. It might just hurt just a little bit. We might have late night conversations with people. We might have difficult roommates. We might have to follow up after hard conversations. Convenience here is often the enemy of sacrificial love. And so we need to reframe our love to be sacrificial, to love people and to lay down our schedules and to lay down our times when appropriate in order to really love people there. And so one skill that we really want to develop here, this is going to be our next fill-in, one skill that we want to really develop in order to dig deep and continue to get in the game is this idea of curiosity and humility that drives you to prayer. I'm actually done with you, mic runners, this time. I appreciate it. Thank you. We lack sometimes a sense of curiosity. I think because we have an independent culture that's like, I'm going to do me, you're going to do you, and I'm going to mind my own business. I don't know if you feel that a little bit. And so what we actually, as a body of believers, need to do is pursue people and humble curiosity. And so one way to do this is instead of saying, oh, here, there you are, or here you are, it's, sorry, one way to do this, excuse me, is saying, instead of saying, here I am, I'm here in the middle of this room just for you to enjoy, it's actually, there you are. Like, there you are. Like, what is going on in your life? Oh, you're doing this thing? I'm going to take a greater interest in what you're doing and ask you many questions about it. This is what the curiosity is. Humility says, like, you don't enter the conversation with people as the main character, immediately saying, oh, this is everything that I'm doing and everything that I'm about. It's actually like, how can I get to know you better and to lay my life down for you and love you and meet you where you're at? Pride often wants to speak first. Humility wants to understand first and draw near to others first. Sometimes in relationships, you might think, oh, I'm kind of bored. There's not really anything to talk about. Like, I like this person, but I'm kind of terrified to be alone with this person because it's just, they're not going to say anything. I just kind of feel awkward. Humility and curiosity says, like, people are made in the God's image, and so they are immensely interesting. There is so much to learn about people. God has created people so uniquely. And so if you are bored with someone, maybe it's not them that's the problem, but maybe it could be you. And I struggle with this, right? And so curiosity and humility will actually help eliminate some of this boredom in relationship. And so as you're even asking questions, you're going to like start with a shallow dirt first of just getting to know someone, just asking a few questions there. And as you continue to dig, you will see that there is a lot behind the surface and you can actually get to the heart with people, which Maggie is going to talk about tomorrow. And so here, there are some questions on the bottom of your packet. There's some questions that can help you get started in terms of asking questions. I'm not going to read all of them, but these questions, I'm not prescribing them on. These are the questions you must ask. But these are just examples of what you can ask because I'm going to give you guys some homework. And Maggie's going to ask you about this homework tomorrow. One of the key follow-up questions that we're specifically going to do, if you jump all the way down to the last point, is A-A-A-R-P, not A-A-R-P, but A-A-A-R-P. So I want you to ask, reflect, and then pray. This is going to be your homework for tomorrow. So with the people in this room, with the people not in this room, I want you to just ask them a bunch of questions, get to know them. This might feel really awkward because you're like, well, I've already known this person for a few years. I feel like I should know this information. Just go back and just be curious. There are people in my life who I've known for like the last 10 or 15 years, and I'm like, I don't actually know how you came to know the Lord. I don't actually know what it was like for you to grow up in your home. What was that like? What were your joys? What were your sorrows? What was your relationship with your parents like? And how does that define who you are now or what you believe? Like, these are questions that are going to help you get to the heart or help you understand people. And so I'm giving this homework for you so that you can know each other better in your fellowships and your relationships. And also, it's going to help you grow your discipleship. So I want you to ask, because if you're asking at least 3 to 4 questions, you're going to understand them a little bit more. I want you to reflect back and say, so it sounds like what you're saying is this. Or when you're sharing this thing about your parents or your family, it sounds like you really felt understood or misunderstood. And you didn't really feel like home was a safe place or vice versa. It felt like home was a joy and actually coming to college really felt like a cost because you felt like you had community there and now you're here. Do you see what I'm saying? Reflect so that you can understand. And if they say, no, that's actually not what I'm saying, maybe ask a few more questions and then reflect to make sure you got it right. And then you can just end with prayer. I mean, Paul here, he had a prayerful proclamation with his people. He loved the people that he invested in. And so you can just thank the person for sharing and just pray for them. Just pray for them. It might feel awkward because it might not, maybe they don't have a suffering that you're specifically praying for. Maybe you're just praying to rejoice in what God has done in that person and that God is praiseworthy for providing X, Y, Z thing. It doesn't matter. But Maggie's going to ask you how it went, and you guys are going to like boisterously share tomorrow with high energy. The last thing here, point A, it says there's kind of two things that can happen as you're meeting with people. There could be the awkward stare or the attention steal that kind of happens. The awkward stare typically happens with people who often see relationships as chemistry. And so when it doesn't really feel like the vibe, and so you're just sitting there, just like kind of awkward, just a helpful thing is just to ask a question there. And that's going to help you with the awkward stare. There is this attention steal that kind of happens when we have a tendency to trump what people are sharing. And so if someone shares something that like, oh, I know exactly what this is like. Hey, me, I've done this thing too. It's good to relate to people. But curious humility says that you're going to view this other person first. And so just ask them more questions about them rather than stealing the conversation away. Sometimes it's helpful to relate and it requires knowing the person and what's actually really helpful. But I just wanted to give you guys those last two fill-ins. I want to thank you guys for your time. I appreciate you. I'm going to pray for us. And then if you guys have any questions based on what Lincoln shared or what I just shared, feel free to raise your hand. I won't keep you here, but I'll release you a little bit early. But I'm going to pray. Dear God, I thank you so much for today. I thank you for your grace and your mercy, Lord. I thank you that you treat us far better than we deserve. I thank you for the ways that you work through your word to help us to see how to love people and how you have first loved us and how you have drawn near to us, Lord. As we go out and seek to ask people questions and get to know people better, Lord, would you help us to go out with boldness and faith, knowing that you are with us, that you have not left us alone, and that we get to partner in your work of ministry with people by the Spirit. Lord, I thank you for all these things, Lord. In your name I pray, amen.